Grandad. Grandad?
Mr. Davis?
Oh, hello, boy. Just resting my eyes.
I'm really sorry to disturb you, Grandad. Boo and I need the room. We're going to record this week's podcast. It's episode 20, Grandad. Can you imagine episode 20?
You're what, boy?
Dave, why does your granddad have a Cockney accent when you're from Birmingham? In fact, aren't your grandparents Welsh?
Shh.
It's our show, Mr. Davis. We review TV programmes, films, computer games. We take a peek at the Week of Geek.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, it sounds familiar. Yeah, must have got the old idea from me, boy.
What?
Well, I used to do that with old Boo's granddad back in the day, son. During the war, we had a programme on the old BBC Light Service, didn't we, hey?
I think you're getting confused, granddad.
Nah, boy, I've got a recording of it here somewhere. Right, Boo, pass me that box, son.
There you go, David's granddad, who in no way sounds like Peter Sellers' old man voice from The Goons.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure I've got it in here. No, right, let's have a look. It's around here somewhere. Bloody hell. No, Christ almighty. I've told your mother not to tidy things up. It makes it a real pain in the arse for me if I think, boy. Yeah. Oh, there we go, eh? Oh, here's me trusty old 78. Right, turn that radio off, son. Stick this on the player, boy. Oof, oh, fucking hell, this will take me back.
Good evening, and welcome, everybody, to the BBC Light Service. Welcome to the only show that cheers on the fleet with popular culture so their bombs explode all over the place. I'm Mr. David Davis.
And I'm Mr. Booley Chessington Lamont.
It's been a cracking old week in the world of entertainment, Mr. Booley.
It certainly has, Mr. David. I've got some TikTok casting news involving Mr. Charles Chaplin and some interesting developments in the world of your favourite character, the Batman. Seems they've introduced a sidekick for the old fellow, a funny young boy named Robin.
Indeed, he certainly does appear to be a gay little chump.
He certainly does, old mate. But first up, we've got this week's correspondent from our man, Mr. Jacob Hodgkins, with some interesting backstory on another of the nation's favourites.
Blimey, who'd have thought that of Vera Lynn, eh, folks?
Anyway, listeners, sit back, relax, draw your blackout curtains, and remember, careless talk costs lives. Blimey, it's the Milking It broadcast.
I've got the feeling.
Welcome, everyone, indeed, to episode 20 of the Milking It podcast, the podcast that tugs the tea to popular culture till it explodes all over your face. As always, I'm David Davis.
And I am Boo Lamont.
And I am Johnny Bailey.
The hell?
What? My goodness, we have a third person in the room. We'll explain all in just a second, but first, let's crack on, as normal, with the geek news. So, this week's Geek News, but first let's explain who that third voice was you heard in the intro. Booley, who is the young man sat next to you in the glamorous Booley recording studio this afternoon?
Well, as it's episode 20, I thought we'd get a special guest in to the studio. Mm-hmm. A young man who I've known for a long time, a very talented individual. He's not only an accomplished independent musician, but is also one of the up-and-coming top British independent wrestlers. Please join me in welcoming Johnny Bailey, a.k.a. Sid Scala.
It's all gone very Steve Wright. So what qualifies Johnny to be sat here discussing things on the UK's number one geek podcast?
I'm I'm a massive nerd.
Excellent. There we go. Sold.
I have a Batman tattoo on my left arm.
It gets better.
That does qualify. No, I've known Johnny for quite a few years. We've been majorly into comic books. We wrestled together in the good old days. We've seen many a movie together, and I mean, this guy shares much of the same opinions as myself and yourself, David. And I just thought for episode 20, we'd get him on board and to join us taking a peek at the Week of Geek.
Absolutely. So I understand, much like last week, there hasn't been a great deal of Booley's favourite casting news.
Dave, my usual opening gambit, unfortunately, this week is very, very slow.
Have they no respect for the way that we like to structure our podcasts?
absolutely none whatsoever. That's not to say that it hasn't been an interesting week in terms of geek news. There's been a lot of reveals, there's been a lot of announcements, but no clear casting news. So, unfortunately, fans, we're going to have to skip the casting news for episode 20. Don't cry. Don't cry. Dry your eye.
But in terms of geek news this week, yes, there's been quite a bit, like you say. One of the most recent things that's happened, and in fact, I watched it this morning. Have you had a chance to catch up with the Days of Futures Past? They've done the actual proper official big trailer announcement and load of new posters and stuff.
Yes, Dave, I managed to catch the new trailer yesterday. Very interesting. What interests me the most is I heard a rumour recently that Halle Berry's scenes are practically all gone from the final cut.
Well, that can only be a good thing, surely.
But did you notice that there was a scene in the trailer which looked kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of doomed Storm a bit?
Yes, yeah, no, a spoiler-free zone, but yes, it did certainly look as if that character had been slightly doomed, shall we say.
Yes, but it looked really interesting. It looks like they're going to manage to achieve with this one what they tried to achieve with the third X-Men, the Final Stand.
Yes, yeah, Last Stand, wasn't it?
Last Stand. Mm. And obviously, we say this every week when we're interested in something, but I'm on board for Days of Futures Past. It looks really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be a dead interesting
thing. Plus, anything with Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart together, you know, that's not a bad thing. It never is. Those two are the, you know, they are the bros of British acting.
They are, to be fair, yeah. If anyone follows Patrick Stewart on Twitter, it is one of the best Twitter accounts to follow because he just posts some of the most wonderful pictures and it seems like someone who is embracing not only old age but an amazing sense of humour to go along with it. So I would say definitely if you follow anyone on Twitter, if you follow anyone, obviously follow us, but if you want to follow someone who...
This is why we don't have followers, Dave. It's like, follow this guy, follow that guy.
Yeah, follow us, actually.
Yeah, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, at Teat Tugger, that's the Milk In It Facebook page. Already, the Totally Insane Tape Show has more followers. How is this possible? We have provided you so much entertainment via the Milking It podcast that it's only fair that you should now go and follow us on Twitter.
Just 24 hours of content.
Yeah, over 24 hours of content, yeah, indeed. If someone wants to spend a whole day listening to us, and Lord knows you need to speak to someone if you do, but you can do.
A day of your life.
Indeed, yeah. On iTunes and on Stitcher.com now, as we mentioned last week, very proud. In fact, Stitcher has proved very successful for us. Looking at a breakdown of some stuff, we're getting a lot of people listening to us from outside the UK now, which is quite extraordinary as to why you'd want to listen to gooning UK residents. But very glad you are. Glad to have you on board. And I'm sure Boo's patronising explanation of anything he thinks Americans won't understand will help you get through the podcast as we go on. Have you seen the information? We were talking last week about Zorro and the fact that there were two films in the works for Zorro. We got quite confused, actually, during our discussion of it.
Yes, because I was only aware that there was one, but I've got my information kind of mingled from the rumours from both.
I saw, though, that this week there was another franchise which is in the same sort of situation, but not quite. I think it's... Well, you'll know more than me, because I know we spoke about it a bit earlier, but there's been a bit of news about Jungle Book, of all things.
Yeah, what is the desire now for these kind of older books and these things that were popular many years ago that have come back into fashion? But, I mean, I am interested... I'm more interested in one over the other, David. Can I break down the two versions that are currently planned?
Please do. Help me understand, Boo.
I will help you understand. Well, Dave, yesterday it was announced that someone else would be taking a live-action... would be directing a live-action Jungle Book. So we'll start with the first one. The first one that was announced a little while ago was a Disney affair. Is to be directed by Jon Favreau. And the only bit of casting news, as I said this week, is that already lined up for that particular version of The Jungle Book is Idris Elba from Pacific Rim and The Wire.
Mm.
And a very popular actor at the moment. He'll be playing somehow Shere Khan.
I imagine he'll be playing it with his voice. I can't imagine they'll be dressing him up.
Yes, Dave. I believe that it will be, I'm presuming that they're going to be attempting to do it in a similar vein to the recent Planet Apes movies.
Which, not an episode goes by. If it's not the Booley's Dusty Rhodes impression, we get a mention of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, baby, let me tell you. Caesar, if you will, greatest ape of all time.
Very good. But linking Planet of the Apes and the other version, I believe.
Is that the other version will be directed by Caesar himself. Andy Serkis, Gollum... Mm. From Lord of the Rings, Caesar from the recent Planet of the Apes, King Kong, loads of stuff. So the guy, has he directed a movie before? Because I heard a rumour that he was going to be directing a version of Animal Farm. Did that come out?
No, I'm not sure whether that came out, but he certainly got a lot of praise because he was second unit assistant director on the Hobbit films. So he's been directing quite a bit of the Hobbit stuff alongside Peter Jackson. So there's a high level respect in terms of being able to churn out a big budget, you know, action sort of, especially something like that, which sounds like it's going to be very heavily involving the sort of CGI, like you say, the sort of the motion capture stuff that he's done before with that and Tim
absolutely,
and all those kinds
and, of and it, he does seem to have an affiliation with these animal based movies. You know, he played King Kong, he played Gollum, who, although he's not an animal, is a creature of sorts.
Mm.
So he's definitely got this motion capture thing down. I out of the two, again, we're always, you know, doing out of the two. Although I like Jon Favreau as a director, I think Idris Elba's a great actor. I'm not the biggest Disney fan, although we've stated on every episode that they own my childhood. every Fair episode. Dude. But out of the two, I definitely want to see the Andy Serkis version because, as we said, he's got the experience, he's got the know-how, he's been praised recently for his work in The Hobbit, he knows these animal movies, and I just think that sounds like a more appealing version.
No, absolutely. And on a personal note, I remember that Andy Serkis once bought a PlayStation 3 from me and was a very nice guy. So we'll Milking It podcast will support him purely on that basis, I think. But no, it'd be interesting to see exactly what he does with that movie, certainly. Talking about your childhood, actually, just a synaptic link just gone off in my head.
Impressed memories.
No, not again!
Star Wars. Did you see the news that went up yesterday from EA talking about the development of the new Star Wars games?
No, I did not. I saw the new development. Next on the Milking It podcast, we're going to be discussing Star Wars by the sound of it. Dave, I don't know whether you heard. I'll obviously let you tell me about the EA
announcement. Have you heard Jenga? We're building it up here. Go.
Okay. They announced yesterday that pretty much everything we're expecting from the Star Wars movie is going to happen. It's set 30 years after Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
It will have Carrie Fisher. It will have Mark Hamill. It will have...
Harrison Ford.
Thank you very much. I don't want to say Han Solo after saying the other actor's name, but it would allow for the age difference to be correct.
Yep.
No matter what happens, no matter how jaded a Star Wars fan I am, I will always be looking forward to the next one, even if the last one was pap. So I am looking forward to this, damn you, Disney. And it'd be good to see some old faces. I just hope they use them correctly and in small cameos that make sense.
I think Disney will do a good job, to be honest.
Of course they will. They've got the money to do a good job. They've got the special effects behind them to do a job. But I'm worried that it's just going to be Star Wars for the, for the not Twilight generation. It's like a generation.
You know, Jar Jar's the lead.
No. Don't jinx things like that, buddy.
I was going to say, Johnny, you are, as Boo has just
the Twilight
said,
generation.
You are the Twilight generation. So how important is Star Wars to you in terms of, would you be interested in seeing the new films? Or
Yeah. My mum and dad had the free VHS of the original trilogy. And,
really? I feel old.
And I used to watch them on, I used to watch them all the time before Phantom Menace came out. And then when Phantom Menace came out, it was like the biggest thing in my life. When it was, everyone else was just moaning and whining about it. But for me, I was like, oh my God, Jar Jar's amazing. I mean, but I was about seven.
I mean, you've always had kind of on a pattern, like, I know, obviously I know this man personally, a lot of your friends are a bit older than you, so they are from a kind of generation above. So when you were into Phantom Menace, we were like, oh, fucking Phantom Menace, or what have they done with our childhood?
Yeah.
He's raping him!
Exactly. No, I think it'll be good. And, like, I know a lot of people are sceptical about Disney kind of buying everything, like Star Wars, Marvel, and things like that. But I think they do a good job. I mean, they do have misses, but I think they have a lot more hits, so I'm looking forward to it.
Disney is forcing me to love them by proxy because of Star Wars and Marvel, and that I just feel a little bit like I'm being pushed.
Your love.
They have.
Like a stepdad you didn't want.
Or a cheap whore.
I think, well, there we go. That proof, if proof be needed, though, that if you were a child watching a child's movie, you actually probably would enjoy it.
Totally. That was what they were gunning for with Episode One.
Of course.
And I think that my generation thought they were meant, like, they have got to appeal to us because we were the original fans, but we forget that they've also got to appeal to the new fans.
I think that's the thing as well. And because we're conditioned from things like, and I hate to bring it back to Batman, but I always do, but we're conditioned with things like...
first Batman mention of the episode, right. Episode 20.
With Batman, we've been conditioned with this idea that to reset that character is to always go darker, to take it more realistic, to make it appeal to the same fans who were buying the comic books 10, 15 years ago would now want to watch a slightly more gritty film and, you know, take it away from that kids thing. But then they've had the common sense to also aim it towards kids with Happy Meal toys and things like that. But
yeah, the Brave and the Bolder.
Completely. So
just on a tangent, you mentioned The Brave and the Bold, the greatest Batman animated series of all time. Other than, it's different. Well, all right. Right, let's not get into
that.
Hold on, guys. Let's be professional about this. Dave, you had some news from EA about Star Wars. When we finish talking about Star Wars, we can get on to Batman the animated series, okay? Because we're not indulging the listener. This is episode 20 of the Milking It podcast, and this is a big thank you to the fans. So let's give them. Well, let's finish what we're talking about, and then we can move on to Batman because we know that's what the fans want.
Okay, so the news from EA was that they are, and you're going to regret saying that because this does tie in with Batman again. Basically, one of the heads of EA was doing an interview about the upcoming Star Wars games, which, as you know, they've scrapped a lot of the ones that were in development, but they're also looking at a whole new load of different IPs for it and some new ideas. And basically, he's admitted that the previous way EA were developing Star Wars games was wrong because they were trying to be too canon and they were trying to develop within the world that already existed and they weren't taking enough risks. He cited the success of the Arkham games and said they want to start looking at that style of taking a single character and throwing them into the Star Wars world, that they can use self-contained stories and you can go on a journey with that character and develop those characters. So the likelihood is, in the future, way off in the future, you may well get a Boba Fett game, you may well get a Han Solo game, and it will be in that kind of style of just going off and doing that sort of 12-13 hour game, like an Arkham City or an Arkham Asylum, where you go on a journey with that character, you encounter other characters from the universe, but it also develops and goes further. And I think they're very wise to do that. That to me sounds exciting.
Awesome.
The thing is, though, sorry, but there's been a Boba Fett game, a standalone Boba Fett game. In fact, I think it was made by EA many years ago on the GameCube, called Bounty Hunter, and it just didn't work. And then there was the scrap game, which I'm desperately trying to remember the name of. It was it's Star Wars. It was 1880, 1860, 1660.
Once again, your research has betrayed you, sir, but yes. I know exactly what you mean, though, yeah.
And anyone listening will know what I'm talking about. And that game was also meant to be you as Boba Fett, as far as I'm aware, or Han Solo, I can't remember. But that looked awesome. But that got scrapped with the new deal. I mean, obviously it's not going to be an Arkham-style game. It's not going to have the same kind of thing as that, because unless you're going to set it on a single planet, so say you've got to spend the entire time on Tatooine. I don't know, with Star Wars...
I think if you've got a strong enough story and you've got good enough characters involved, then I would quite happily spend, you know...
I think Arkham Asylum was just based in the asylum. And like that sounds like, on paper before the game came out, that sounded like a bit limiting, but the game was really good.
Well, maybe for your Twilight generation, sir, but I remember games like Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is all set in one place. It's set in one castle. and it's epic. And in fact,
no, I'm not saying that because it was set in one place. What I mean is the Batman universe is massive, enormous. like it's like Star Wars. Obviously, it's huge, but I think that, like Dave says, as long as the story is good enough, it can be quite contained.
I mean, like, would you play an entire game set in Jabba's palace? I'm just giving an example. I'm not disagreeing.
I think I would.
I think I would too. I think it'd be awesome. But when it comes to Star Wars, I like to go from planet to planet, and that was one of the reasons.
Ratchet and Clank style,
or Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic style. Sure. And the reason that Ratchet and Clank would be awesome. I think it could work. So they're going to go with a gritty reboot of a single player adventure. That's fine. We're going to get our, what's it called, Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront 3, yep. The real deal, that's going to come out 4 even.
Is that on next gen as well?
That is going to be on next gen as well. So, I mean, there is plenty to look forward to in terms of Star Wars games, and I am looking forward to Star Wars Episode 7. So, not only does the story now sound a bit more interesting, that they're going to, you know, bring in these older characters for the older generation to recognise and to see, and I think it's nice because you're going to have parents and kids, and the parents are going to recognise Han and Leia. The kids are going to have these new characters to look out for, and as long as they don't kind of emo the characters up,
yeah, as long as they don't harvest them to the current climate, yeah.
Then I think I'm pretty much looking forward to Star Wars.
Absolutely. The other news which will please you from Star Wars this week, Boo, was that do you ever watch the Clone Wars series?
Do you know, I don't, and I've been told to.
Totally do.
Totally do.
Yeah, definitely. I've not caught a huge amount of it, but I've caught little bits and pieces, and it is really good. And the style that it's animated in is really, really smart as well. But they're doing a standalone episode of Jar Jar Binks and Mace Windu going off on an Indiana Jones style adventure. So that'd be something for you to look forward to.
Why are they reminding people about Jar Jar?
I don't know about that.
Well, am I right? Am I correct in understanding that the Clone Wars TV series just had a sixth season brought out? And was it a Netflix exclusive or a Love Film exclusive? Or
I think it was Netflix exclusive, as far as
I didn't even know it was on Netflix. That's brilliant.
I think it's on US Netflix. I'm not sure about UK Netflix. Yes, you'll have to do one of those cheeky workarounds that we keep mentioning here on the Milking It podcast.
I have no idea what you're speaking about.
But just quickly before we finish our conversation on the Batman animated series, Dave. Another plethora of new photographs from the Batman Gotham TV series.
Thank goodness this series exists, for we would have nothing to discuss every week.
Absolutely. Welcome to the Gotham TV series podcast.
As I said a couple of episodes ago, I hope to God this is fucking good, because if it's not, then it's going to be such a mess. If this is Birds of Prey all over again, we're in a lot of trouble. But so far, looks pretty good. So what were the photos that went up this week?
Well, Dave, the most recent one that I actually shared on the Milking It Facebook group, that's facebook.com/milkingit, mm-hmm. Was a picture of Sean Pertwee as Alfred.
Oh, excellent. I will check that out, because I've been interested to see what they do with him. Because they're going, as we've discussed before, down that sort of Grant Morrison route of the slightly more SAS, younger sort of, probably be involved in Batman's training eventually, and kind of tough guy thing, looking after, obviously, Bruce Wayne after his parents have been killed.
I've seen very little things he's in, but everything I've seen him in was fantastic.
I'm misremembering.
One of the best movies I've seen him in was a film called Dog Soldiers. It's a horror film.
British horror, yeah.
Movie, yeah.
It's a British horror film about a group of soldiers on
dogs.
Maneuvers, and they end up fighting werewolves. And it is a really good, gritty, and fairly funny, British horror film. Maybe one that we could talk more at length of on the Totally Insane Tape Show with myself and Mr. Dino Peppers, available now on iTunes. Episode 3 will be available in the next few weeks.
Excellent. I look forward to your discussion of that. But yeah, from what I remember, it was quite black humour to it. It was very dark. But yeah,
he's already kind of a decent actor in my eyes, and now he's playing Alfred Pennyworth. The line that was written for this photo is: Alfred is a tough as nails ex-marine from East London who has loyally served the Waynes. Now, in the wake of their tragic death, he's fiercely protective of the young Master Bruce.
They've stolen that from the Beware the Batman animated series, because Beware the Batman, Alfred is hard as nails.
I think they kind of own all of that anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no, they're beyond the Batman sorry, Beware the Batman. Gosh, get the Batman series confused. Beware the Batman was very much inspired by the Grant Morrison comics. That's why you ended up with Mr. Pig and Mr. Toad and Professor Pig and those kind of characters. So yeah, they went down that route quite a while ago. But yeah, it's a really good, interesting take on Alfred, definitely. Yeah.
Before we leap back onto Gotham, so I've not actually seen Beware the Batman. Now earlier I stated that the Brave and the Bold was one of the, I would say is. It's a toss up between that and the 90s animated series. So I know you're dying to tell me a few things, Mr. Bailey. So I know you're a huge fan of the 90s animated series.
Yeah.
And I know you, and David, I know you are as well.
Just a little.
I know you've also seen The Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, I have.
I would say that the Music Meister episode of The Brave and the Bold holds up with any Batman anything. It's one of my favourite things. For those that don't know, it's Neil Patrick Harris of How I Met Your Mother fame, Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, playing a villain called the Music Meister, and his ability is that when he uses his powers, everyone breaks into song. It's a really great musical episode. Highly recommended if you're not aware of Batman the Brave and the Bold.
The difference for me is that when I was watching the 90s, I was a kid, and it was just the best.
You can't have been, because me and Dave were kids in the 90s. That's impossible.
Well,
1992, so that was...
Oh, well, it was still on when I was young, anyway.
Yes,
it probably completely finished being produced.
You would have seen it. They didn't stop playing it just because, we grew up.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. And
that's how TV works.
Because I've been kind of watching it a lot recently, just around the same time Brave and the Bold came out, I just couldn't get into the kind of bright colours,
the campiness.
Yeah, the campiness of it. It was a bit too much Adam West for, and he was in an episode.
Whoa!
No! He's not saying there's anything wrong with it.
My Batman taste is more in the kind of darker elements, and like with Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy, it was just perfect.
You see, whereas I kind of toe the line, I do like the campy Batman, but I also like some of the darker elements about. This is why Batman's such an interesting character, because he is one of the only characters I can think of where you can go from one extreme, camp, the bat-touché, the dance, to the downright dark and extreme Red Mist, Batman versus Dracula, a vampire Dracula that kills, spoiler alert, everybody. So yes, there's the Batman universe is just so interesting. Obviously, we mention it every week here on the Milk and It podcast. Just quickly to go back to Gotham, Dave, I don't suppose you saw the pictures of Selina Kyle.
I did, yeah. It was both Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne on set, wasn't it? The first sort of pictures. They've done a couple of on-set ones and a couple of the official ones. But
the on-set photo I saw of Selina Kyle, she's dressed up like Catwoman from Arkham Asylum, Arkham City.
Well, I don't know. There's kind of hints at it. The outfit itself is quite... It's very well done, because it could just be normal stuff that she's pulled on, like a coat and trousers and things, but the combination of it and the framing behind her head as well makes it look like little cat ears and stuff. So it's obviously quite clear that they're doing that. But again, as we mentioned last week, the age difference thing, it looks like there is quite a few years age difference between the young Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle. Probably not much, but certainly more than I would have
thought. If it worked for Anakin Skywalker, you can wear
wizard.
Right, though, but and the last bit of Gotham news this week was: did you see the picture that they released with Harvey Bullock?
I did. Yes.
Did you notice what was in the night sky?
I did not. No.
It was the only picture from the Gotham photos with the bat signal in it.
Hello? One second.
Exactly. Now, I don't know whether this was a mistake. I don't know whether this was on purpose. But I was under the assumption that there would be no bat symbols or anything, maybe until a lot later on in the show. And certainly no bat signal.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, I hadn't clocked that. Whether it
Here
was,
we go. I'm milking it first.
We're nerds, so we can't assume that anything's a mistake. There are reasons for everything.
There are reasons for everything. It's symbolic, my friend.
It's an online scavenger hunt.
It is. We're going to be piecing together as much information in the next few weeks about the Gotham TV show. And, of course, join us for when it finally does get released. We will be giving a big, big review of the first episode of Gotham as soon as that hits our TV show.
Absolutely. I would not be surprised if we... sit there and do a commentary track over that particular one.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Riff track style.
Mm, absolutely. We can move away from Batman, I think. We've probably...
Well, Dave, I do want to move away from Batman, but I'm sorry, we're sticking to the realms of superhero-dom here. I do actually have... I don't suppose you caught the Marvel Studio special that was on in America the other day called Assembling a Universe.
No, I didn't. Not a big surprise to regular listeners.
That's fair. Basically, there's been a lot of Marvel reveals over the last couple of weeks. And there was a Marvel special on ABC in America the other day. And they gave a little sneak preview of the end of Phase 2 and 3 Marvel movies, including a very interesting shot. They were showing concept art and some of the models that are going to be used in Avengers 2 Age of Ultron.
Oh, okay.
And there is a Hulkbuster outfit. Not only in the concept art, but they showed the arm of the Hulkbuster armor in an actual photograph. That's huge. Literally huge. So I'm going to be under the assumption that at some point during Avengers 2, we're going to see a battle between Iron Man and Hulk, and I mean a proper full-on battle, like where they are on equal footing.
That would be very cool. I'd definitely like to see that. I enjoyed the Avengers film, so as I've said before, so I'm quite looking forward to that. I won't be bothering with the new Captain America, but I definitely get on board to watch the next.
The only other kind of tidbit I've got from the Marvel Studios this week is that they leaked some pictures again from the Avengers 2 set, where they revealed in outfit and on the set not only Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, but what we're presuming is the first shot of Ultron.
Oh, okay.
Now, Quicksilver looked so bad that people were commenting, oh, maybe the X-Men Days of Futures Past Quicksilver doesn't look so bad.
Was this the sort of emo Quicksilver?
This was emo Silver. And Scarlet Witch looks fine. They've taken the most realistic... They've given her the most realistic outfit they could without her wearing the famous red swimsuit, which she is known for walking around in. It looks fine. I've got no problem with it. I'm really looking forward to not only Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm looking forward to Ant-Man, I'm looking forward to Avengers 2. So the only way is up for Marvel Studios.
No, absolutely. I mean, like we said before, there's a lot of good stuff coming up. And what's making me laugh now is I can't remember a time in like years gone past where films would be announced sort of 2 or 3 years before they're due, but we're getting announcements even this week of films that are due in sort of 2016. I know they've spoken.
Funny you should say that, Dave, because Fox have just announced that they've found a director for the new Wolverine movie. That's going to be Wolverine 3, which opens May 2017.
Blimey, Charlie, that's a way off, isn't it? I can't imagine. Will we still all be alive by that point?
Will anyone still be excited at that point?
Yeah,
Will Hugh Jackman be doing it?
No, Hugh Jackman has been... They are trying to keep Hugh Jackman in it. They want him to be the guy. You know, they want him to be Wolverine for as long as possible. And it's true, he has done a fantastic job. And you've got to remember that he's now been Wolverine for 14 years.
I was going to say, I wonder if he's the actor that's played the same superhero for the longest amount of time. He must be in the running for it.
Yeah, he's got it.
Absolutely. You're not wrong, David. You're not wrong at all.
Because it's very unusual for someone to click in a role like that and be kept.
I mean, that's like James Bond level of commitment. Like, I've been playing that same role for that long. Like, you know, he is Wolverine. It's going to be very, very difficult to replace him now.
No, absolutely. And has always done a good job. I wasn't a massive fan of the last Wolverine film, I must admit. But
no, I haven't seen... I mean, that Wolverine Origins was obviously a bust. It was it must have been bad. I've actually never seen it because I've been steer cleared of it by everybody. People that like me, anyway. I haven't seen the latest one, although it does interest me because I've always had a big interest in that aspect of Wolverine's origin with Noriko and her father, who actually was created the Weapon X program, which Wolverine came from. And then you've got the Silver Samurai, who's a very unknown villain. He was actually I was first made aware of the Silver Samurai via the X-Men: Children of the Atom beat 'em up game from the 90s. First beat-em-up by Capcom based on the X-Men. And I was really interested in the character after that. So, all of these films should appeal to me. And, of course, there was a post-credit on the last Wolverine movie that ties that particular movie into the next X-Men movie.
Yes, yes, indeed. Do you know what? I've just thought, something's just come to me, that I know full well that... And Johnny, I don't know if you've noticed, but on our Facebook page, our fabulous contributor, Jay, will always point out if we've made an error. It's nice of him to do so. but I've just said that about Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine for probably the superhero. I know for a full fact that Jay would point out that Kevin Conroy has been playing Batman for longer.
Yeah, but it hasn't been... Yeah, it's been uninterrupted is Hugh Jackman, isn't it? You
know? To be fair, who else is playing Wolverine live on screen? Or who else... Like, with Kevin Conroy, we're pre-arguing. This is a preempted argument, just in case.
Well, Kevin Conroy did play Wolverine. No, he didn't. Oh. Mark Hamill played Wolverine.
Oh, I was going to say, what?
Yeah, Mark Hamill played Wolverine in the computer game that was released on the original Xbox, which would break the run of that if you want to talk about big budget Wolverine characters. So,
which game?
Is that a voiceover?
Yeah,
of course. So, but we can't. I see on screen and voiceover in different categories, to be honest.
Yes, I was. That's kind of what I'm saying with Mark with Kevin.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, totally. But with Kevin Conroy, you've got other people playing Batman at the same time in various films, games, blah, 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 what have you. Okay, on screen, there is no one else who you look at Wolverine and you as a live action character, you think Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. I think on a technicality, Dave, you are absolutely correct. He's the longest running, as far as I'm aware. I don't count Lou Ferrigno as the Hulk. That's over now. You know, this is. You're right. He is probably the longest-standing player of the character.
As someone much more famous than me once said, prove me wrong.
When did I say that?
Get in contact with us. It's milkingitpodcast@gmail.com, or you can get in contact with us on facebook.com/milkingit and let us know if we are incorrect. Is Hugh Jackman the longest-running screen superhero? I say yes. What say the milksters?
Hello, milksters. Your old pal and friend of the show, Mossman here, off of 80s classic cartoon, Masters of the Universe. As you can imagine, I've had a lot of time on my hands since that cartoon finished, and I've been aching to hear some quality, geeky podcast that rounds up all the news in a nice, tight package. Only thing is, we don't have iPhones. Oh, not after old King Randor fell out with Steve Jobs back in 92. Well, imagine my delight that now the Milking It podcast is available on Stitcher for Android users like myself. Stitcher.com has all the information. Oh, I can't wait to tell Fisto. He'll be well made up.
This week, we join Jay Hodgkin as he plays a blast from the past of Star Wars. Does that make sense? It doesn't have to, as we join him in the Sticky Thumb Fun Emporium.
A long time ago, 2003, in a galaxy far, far away, the Xbox One, the first Xbox, came Knights of the Old Republic, a.k.a. the best Star Wars game ever. And yes, it was. Stick your Dark Forces 2 and your X-Wing games up your Hannes, sir. Well, okay, can we at least agree it was the best Star Wars story outside of the movies? Look, I know how you book nerds love your Thrawn and your Timothy Zahn and what have you, but the books are pretty much a wank fantasy about the all-knickers, no-trousers Boba Fett, who to moviegoers is an ineffectual hat stand in a robot ass crack mask who ends up being an aperitif to the vagina of the desert. Vagina of the desert. I bet it's pretty barren. Lols. Surely something we can all agree on at the very least is the Knights of the Old Republic game is that it is the coolest koalas kanakas. A triumph of incredible epic storytelling coming out slap bang in the middle of the maligned prequel trilogy, thus possibly making George Lucas's blubbery face as red as a baboon's rump. Bioware probably slapped it down on his desk before shouting, "That's how you do it!" before striding off manfully, kissing George's smitten, busty secretary on the way out. Possibly to the virtuoso rising guitar wankery of the Top Gun theme, if you like to imagine that. But you rascal! Hold on to those horses there! What in the effery Jefferson is this old bastard of a game doing walking around on our downloadable reviews game yard in its gown and slippers? Get back to the era of Limp Bizkit, Matrix sequels and internet dial-up noises, you doddery old coot. What? You were re-released for iOS in late 2013 to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the game's release? Well, you just sit yourself down, old boy. I'll break out the Earl Grey and the Battenberg. KOTOR, who doesn't love a good old acronym, eh? Plays very well on the iPad. The control system has been simplified to a point-and-click style affair, which works perfectly well, as it was always a game that did require quick reactions, even during the combat sequences. Graphically, the character models maybe look a little bit ragtag now, but some of the worlds you visit still hold up quite well visually. Korriban and the Rakata planet, in particular, are suitably imaginative Star Wars-y vistas. KOTOR is as timeless a gem as a lightsaber crystal. While the conversation and combat systems may feel decrepit compared to BioWare's later Mass Effect series, it's the thoroughbred grade A Star Wars story that sets it apart. The unravelling mystery of the memory-deficient protagonist is utterly gripping, and his crew are fully fleshed-out characters who each have their own rich stories spotlighted throughout the course of play. While I, like many other people, am a card-carrying member of the Murder PO Droid HK-47 fan club, one of my favourites is Jodie Bindu, a Jedi with no affiliation to the light or dark side. Mysterious races like the Wookiees and Jawas have their own cultures explored. You'll spend time at both the Jedi and Sith Academies as your character struggles with his own leanings. Leanings which will affect how you treat others, how they treat you, that hinder or help your progress, and which will ultimately decide the fate of the galaxy itself. It's concepts and characters like these that add the exact inventive magic and brilliant characterisation that the prequels so badly lacked. It's tricky to get through the prequels at times, even to an uber Star Wars geek and prequel apologist like myself. And they have Natalie Portman in them, who I would murder an academy of younglings for just to touch her perfect face for a single half second. I don't think she'd find that particularly gusset dampening, I fear. Unlike my dear Natalie, KOTOR is not completely flawless. It's set some 4,000 years before the events of the movies and features technology on par with the latter era. The Ebon Hawk ship is to the Millennium Falcon what Katy Perry is to Zooey Deschanel, for instance, i.e. completely identical. Except maybe some bigger guns. Anyway, 4,000 years is a long time for inventors to just shrug and down tools. We didn't even have kites until 3,000 years ago on Earth, and now we have spaceships. It's not that there aren't things you couldn't work on. The firearms of the bad guys seem awfully off in most of the Star Wars media, for instance. Sort that out. Another detractor from the engrossing storylines are the constant requirements to take part in underdeveloped swoop bike races and space battles that are as jarringly bad and dull as plot lines about trade disputes. But enough bad mouthing. If you haven't played it and you're a Star Wars fan, I'm here to tell you, Jack, you ain't no Star Wars fan. Get yourself to the iTunes store and play the granddaddy of all Star Wars adventures. 5 out of 5 thumb marks from me. Now, I think I'd best lay off the Star Wars for a bit, otherwise we may have to change the title to the Aunt Beru's Blue Milk Milking It podcast. And that stuff looks disgusting. Remember, the Force will be with you. Always.
So, carrying on with the geek news on this, episode 20 of the Milking It podcast, Dave. Ah, oh, it's been a long discussed thing here on the Milking It podcast. In fact, I can hear the monster Judas banging at the door as we speak. Yes. Oh crap. Ghostbusters 3.
Yes.
With the untimely death of Harold Ramis a couple of weeks back, Ivan Reitman has stepped down, saying he can no longer in good faith direct this project.
Staying on as producer, though, I think.
He will be staying as producer. They're scrambling around, and the front runners at the moment are the team of Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who produced the 21 Jump Street movie and, of course, more recently, the Lego movie.
Oh, everything is awesome.
But is it, David? But is it awesome?
I would have quite liked to have heard the news that they're not going to do Ghostbusters 3.
Dave, I thought, like, no Bill Murray, no Ghostbusters. That's understandable, but it was still up in the air.
Yeah.
No Harold Ramis. Yeah. No Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. for me, and I had this discussion on our Facebook page with a couple of the Milksters, where they quite rightly pointed out that in interviews at the time, yes, we've had this discussion, you did play it. Johnny, did you ever play the Ghostbusters game on the Xbox or PS3?
No.
No.
You remember it, though. You must have seen me play it.
Yeah, we played it a couple of times around your house, but no, I didn't have it, no.
Okay, it's worth checking out. It's very, very well
it's
done.
It's very... That is, in essence,
probably
the nearest
cheap as well.
Right now it's going to be very cheap, and
you say that. I bought one online after our discussion on the podcast because I'm like that, so I could play it.
$1 billion.
And I paid £78 for it. It cost me about 12 quid still, so it's not in the bargain.
That's bearable. That's bearable for Ghostbusters.
The irritating thing was, though, I put it in. Sorry, and this is interrupting completely what I was going to ask you. But I put it into my machine.
Who are you going to call?
Started playing it. And because the version I'd previously had was an import copy, it wouldn't recognize the save file, and it automatically overwrote it. So I've had to start at the beginning again. I was just hoping to have a go at like some random levels and check it out. But yeah, I've had to start again. But it's made up for it purely by having the wonderful menu music that always plays in my head whenever I'm on. Yes. Anyway.
Ghostbusters 3.
Sorry, yes. So they all said in the interview for that, they all said that was the third movie. The script they used, the ideas that they developed with the people who were making that particular game, both Ramis and Aykroyd wrote it, all four of them got back in the studio and recorded stuff for it. And unfortunately, that seems to have been forgotten by people, because obviously if it's a computer game, the mainstream, quote-unquote, audiences don't pay any attention to that. It's a shame that I would quite happily watch Ghostbusters 3 as an animated feature, maybe, that they could do and bring the team back together.
No, I really feel... I love Ghostbusters, but I really feel that, like, it is time to let... For lack of a better phrase, it's time to lay Ghostbusters to rest. I think with the passing of Harold Ramis, the original team is no longer. It's just not the same. It was all or nothing. You had to have everybody in there for it to be genuinely Ghostbusters. You had to have the entire team, and that includes Ramis and that includes Murray. And now there is no way. Maybe in the afterlife, but right now there is no reunion that will make me pop for a new Ghostbusters movie. And I mean, with this. With the hiring of Phil Lord and Chris Miller, or the rumor, I'm thinking we're just gonna get like not a teen comedy, but maybe we're gonna get one of those. Not that it's a bad genre, but like I don't know, like maybe like they're known for making these films with like kind of Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill and that kind of thing, and I'm just worried that we'd see them in there. And what I'd like to see, if I had to have. Had to have a new Ghostbusters movie, I would want a new team.
But that's the issue, and that's how I look at it. I don't know how you two think, is that I wouldn't have so much of a problem if they weren't calling it Ghostbusters 3. So if it was just Ghostbusters and they were relaunching a franchise and a couple of the guys were involved in writing it, and there's a little bit of a cameo by Dan Aykroyd, or you know, there's some little nods to it existing previously, the idea of them trying to shoehorn in the old team and a brand new team of, hey, it's the youngsters and they're all doing slapsticky funny stuff and we're going out. I kind of like one or the other. I don't really want a weird little mesh.
Dave, are you aware of the extreme Ghostbusters?
I certainly am, yes. They were the ones who used to drink beer and have Singapore canes, weren't they?
The Extreme Ghostbusters, the animated series, yes. From the late 90s, you had one in a wheelchair, you had one that was a girl, you had Eugenius, and the only original characters in that I remember were Egon and Janine.
Janine Mills, yeah.
And the rumour, a few years ago, there was a rumour that was what they were going to be basing Ghostbusters 3 off. You were going to have a select two of the Ghostbusters and Janine, and you were going to have them come in and help start this new team, and that was what the focus was going to be on. And in fact, I believe that's where the original rumor of having the dead Peter Venkman still in the firehouse came from.
Right, okay.
I think that was the first ever script where they had that idea. And I don't even know if I would have gone for that. I really feel like Ghostbusters has come to the end of its natural life, and with the passing of Harold Ramis, I truly feel that should be the full stop.
However, we would still like to see the Ghostbusters Lego and the Ghostbusters Lego game. Can we just qualify at the Milk
Yes, please. We do. But I never said anything about a game. If you want to produce another Ghostbusters game, be my guest, because the last... it's got to be a proper one, not like an indie game. There was one... they released on the Xbox Live and the PlayStation Network. And
God, that was awful. That was the top-down style.
It was. Yeah. The Sunning of Slime, like Pillar of Slime or something like that. It was bad.
Yeah, Bucket of Slime or something. It was bloody awful. Yes.
Ghostbusters, it's... The fact that it's suddenly been such an interest in it since Ramis' death as well, it's like they're like, quick, before everyone forgets the name Ghostbusters.
Hmm. Yeah, there does seem to be a little bit of that, to be fair. But
let it go.
We shall
let
see.
Let it go.
Talking. Go on.
No, I was going to say one movie sequel that they did announce this week.
Mm.
There was two. There's one I'm very interested in and one I've got no interest in, but they're from the same studio, Dave. I don't know whether you were about to share this news. Did you ever see the original film, The Incredibles?
Oh, yes. Love that film.
Absolutely wonderful film, and in my opinion, one of the best superhero movies ever made.
Yes,
to this day,
a proper nod and a love story to superheroes. It was
absolutely
so well done.
Well, Pixar announced this week that not only is Cars 3 in the making, that's a series I've not got much interest in.
Yeah.
However, The Incredibles 2 is in production.
And
will we see the return of Edna Mode?
I hope so. Definitely
capes.
That'd be amazing.
Hashtag no capes.
Hashtag no capes.
Hashtag. Oh my god, it's all gone very modern. Did you also see? And we're talking of superheroes. I'm going to crowbar this one in. Johnny?
Yeah.
Did you ever read The Beano or The Dandy?
Yeah, The Beano was probably more me than The Dandy. Yeah.
Johnny Bailey is not a dandy. He is a Beano, sir. Were you ever aware?
Don't ask me or anything.
Oh, sorry. I'm just trying to bring the guest in.
I know, I'm just joking. Look, we are
listen
the Bash
to you
Street
bang
kids.
On about The Incredibles for the past 10 minutes. I'm just going to...
Bash Street Kids, I like that as a tag team name.
Write it down. I'm sure it's been done. Are you aware, Johnny, or Boo, of the character Banana Man?
When Eric eats a banana, he becomes Banana Man.
The muscles of 20 men and the brains of 20 muscles. Yes, absolutely. They've not so much announced as launched a website with one simple phrase on it, which is basically confirmed. There's going to be a Banana Man movie.
It's crazy.
He's the hero that we deserve.
And certainly the one who's turned up right now. I'm so excited about this. I can't tell you.
Let's break it down for our guests and international fans. Banana Man started life as a short animated cartoon by a comedy group in the UK called The Goodies.
Well, it started in the comic books, but yes, it was developed into a cartoon which The Goodies provided the...
I apologise, I thought The Goodies invented it.
No, it came from a comic book artist called Dave Donaldson. It was written by Steve Bright. And mostly drawn by quite a famous artist called John Gearing until he died around 99. Basically, it's a parody of the Superman and Batman things, but there's sort of elements of Captain Marvel and those sort of British Marvel Man, as it was known in Britain. And so that sort of silver age of the DC comics, really. It was very, very slapstick. It was very eccentric. It's very, very British, I thought. And basically they took it into The Dandy. It's also appeared in The Beano, so it's been in both of those, but it's been one of their longest running strips. It's been around since 1980, so it's as old as me, and has always been very popular. But yeah, so they took it from the pages of the Dandy and the Beano, and it went on to TV, I can confirm, in 1983. So, yeah, so it was quite a quick development from page to screen. But that's how I know it, is when I was little. It was always on the TV, and it always had some very funny voices done by Graham Garden and Bill Oddie and the goodies in general. They did the idea being that Graham Garden played the character of Banana Man and all the good guys, and the other goodies played the baddies. So it was Bill Oddie and Tim Brooke Taylor doing the voices of the rest of them. So, but I would quite happily watch that again. I'm going to have to start looking at some episodes on YouTube in preparation, because I'm very excited about the idea of it being a movie.
I mean, it's going to be an animated movie, or do we think it's going to be live action?
It's at the moment, they're talking about it being an animated movie. It's going to be a CG movie. It's been developed with Elstree Studios. Elstree will be famous to me, and probably a few other Milksters, because of the production of the Carry On films, which did some recording in Elstree. Hello, etc. So I'm quite excited about that. That's all right, isn't it? Banana Man film.
Cool. That is cool. It's a homegrown, excuse the pun, British superhero movie. It's been a long time coming, and the reinvention of Banana Man. I love it.
Absolutely, and I think that there was a point where the Dandy... Is the Dandy still going? Because there was
I was about to say to you, Dave, am I under the impression that they're no longer printing the Beano Dandy? It's a digital thing only now? Am I correct in
Do you know what? You are, in fact, and much like our discussion of Zorro, I'm looking at this now. The final printed edition, it ran from 1937... And the final printed edition was on the 4th of December 2012. The comic's 75th anniversary. It was when it started. It went up to a high of selling 2 million copies a week in the 1950s. In its final week of sales, it sold 8,000.
Wow! Oh,
yeah. So not a particularly brilliant way of ending, but yes, it exists now as the Digital Dandy. Oh god. And appears on the Dandy website and on the Dandy app, apparently, which wasn't as successful. We're learning things every day's a school day, kids. The digital relaunch wasn't as successful as planned, and the comic ended just 6 months later. So no, we're talking about something that no longer exists, kids.
Wow, we really come that far. Probably a bit ironic that we're using these programs to record a podcast that you can listen to on your handheld device, but I do think it's a shame that we've now come that far that we've actually lost some of our identity, especially as a childhood thing. As fans of comic books, obviously we've come to this show to talk about comic books and superheroes and the kind of thing, and I just think it's a shame that technology's kind of pushed out a very traditional British comic book, and that's a shame, but times move on, as do we.
It weirds me out when someone's reading a comic on an iPad. Like, it actually weirds me out, because I don't see the kind of enjoyment in it.
I get that. I find it much more satisfactory to read a comic book / graphic novel in its paper format. I find reading on screen...
Have either of you downloaded comics on an iPad or a touchscreen or anything?
I've been here at the Milk and It podcast, Dave. We were fortunate enough to be sent some comic books by a couple of independent artists that I enjoyed greatly. But I had to, you know, the only way we could read these was on my tablet. So I have experience from reading comic books on tablets. I prefer
I've got some on my laptop, but I mean, I got The Killing Joke, and I just thought, I read about two pages and just went, I'm just going to get a hardback of it.
Yeah. Something like The Killing Joke is, and this will sound utterly pretentious, but it's, you are owning a piece of art there, so you need the hard copy of that, definitely. But the thing that freaks me out about, like, if I download comics on my iPad and stuff, because I've been reading the Batman 66 comics.
Cool.
Which are very, very cool. But I've missed a couple of things, and while I was waiting for them, I was like, oh, you know, it's like 60p or whatever. Actually, it's not. It's about $1.99. I'll get those on the iPad so I can kind of read them before, and then I'll get the collection or whatever when it comes out. But what freaks me out about the way that DC and Marvel do their thing through the app, which escapes my brain, but I'll think about it in a second.
Call it the Marvel app.
Well, it's a comic book app that they both use. DC developed it, and then Marvel bought into it, and they both use it as a download portal. Is that it? When you're tapping, it takes you from panel to panel, so it's like it's almost telling you where you have to look, which is really weird.
Yeah.
It's a strange way of reading, because I'm so used to reading a normal comic book where you'll sit there and you decide what you're going to look at, and if you want to look at something a little bit closer, or you want to pinpoint a little bit of the art and think, oh right, that's a hint at that or whatever, then you do that, and some things you miss and you get it on a second read and everything. But it's really, really obvious, because it decides for you how you're going to read it. It's quite strange, quite a weird technology. But still, that's the way things are going. And, if by digital sales it means that they can continue doing print copies of stuff, then that can only be a good thing, surely.
Yeah. It's true.
Definitely. Actually, talking of things from our childhood, things which probably mean more to our international milksters than they do to us. Did you get a chance to check out the teaser trailer for the Peanuts movie?
I haven't, and this is something that a regular contributor and friend of the show, Jay Hodgkin, put it up on his Facebook, and I completely forgot to have a look. Is it all CG, am I to understand?
It is. It's done by the guys who did, it's by Blue Sky, who did Ice Age and Horton Hears a Who and all those kind of films. So
it's very, very, very CG.
Yes, it's very CG, but the CG is done in the Charles Schulz illustration style. So it looks perfect and reminds me completely of the original animated stuff that used to be on when we were kids, which was probably reruns from the 1970s or something. But it was.
Yeah, I was going to say that I've definitely seen Charlie Brown Saved Christmas. Is it?
It's a Charlie Brown Christmas. I think it's called something like that.
A Charlie Brown Christmas. There we go. With a young Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas doing the voice of one of the characters. If my pop culture knowledge serves me correctly.
Wow. Okay. I've just learned something. I did not know that.
There you go. She was the voice of the blonde girl.
The blonde girl.
I'm not a fan of Peanuts. I'm going
to
say it.
No. I mean, it, like I say, I think it meant more to people in the UK. Sorry, in the US than it did over here.
She was in It's Flash Beagle, Charlie Brown, Snoopy Gets Married, The Charlie Brown and Snoopy Show.
Ah, well, there we go.
There you go. Not that I'm a fan of this. I can't stand the woman or her music, but she was in Married with Children and The California Dreams. Do you remember that, Dave?
Oh, my bloody hell. That takes me back. Yes.
Don't wake me up if I'm dreaming.
Hello, pretend Cockney TV presenter Russell Brand here, Dinkle, Ballbag, etc. When I'm not trying to start a faux revolution or get my end away, cor blimey, I like to visit facebook.com/milkingit. It's full of geeky goodness, ain't it? Sighting, if anything, Dinkle, tight trousers, etc. Revolution? Anyone?
I'm Barry Scott. Are you having problems with your everyday podcast? Well, why don't you grab some tin? It's the totally insane tape show featuring Dino Peppers and Poon Lamont reviewing the very best and very worst of cult cinema. Get it in your kitchen, get it in your ear. I'm Barry Scott.
So, for the first time ever, we also have a Milking It competition. Can you believe a Milking It competition? Yes, you can win a fabulous prize, which is a Mini Mates Jay and Silent Bob from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Yes, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes themselves, immortalised in Mini Mate form. The way you can win it is by sending us the answer to a certain question. Yes, the email address to send it to is milkingitpodcast@gmail.com. That is milkingitpodcast@gmail.com. Give us your email and we will draw it at random. And next week on episode 21, you could be the winner of these fantastic mini mates. The question to answer is, what is the name of Kevin Smith's horror movie inspired by a Gumtree ad that's out later this year? That's What is the Name of Kevin Smith's horror movie inspired by a Gumtree ad that's out later this year. We've mentioned it many times on the Milking It podcast, but give us your answer at milkingitpodcast@gmail.com and you could be a winner. Okay, continuing with our geek news this week with myself, Dave, Boo and Johnny, we have some games news. Boo-lee, what's been happening in the weird, geeky world of games?
Well, Dave, as both of us thoroughly enjoyed Assassin's Creed Black Flag, this will come as a welcome bit of news, although I'm questioning how they're going to improve upon the last game with the first trailer, the Unity trailer.
Sacre bleu.
For the new Assassin's Creed, set in during the French Revolution, as far as
very very Les Mis, yes.
Maybe that is to capture on that, you know, Jean Valjean.
he stole a loaf of bread, and now he's become an assassin. That's going to be the beginning of the whole thing.
Yeah, it works. It works.
And, will they sing? Or do you think? I buy that game.
Sadly, pre-Eiffel Tower, Paris, so we're not going to get the opportunity to climb the famous monument if it's set in the timeline that they've set it in. But I'm glad that they've come back to it. Yep. It's a great series. It's just getting better and better.
Yeah, the teaser trailer that they released the other day, I must admit, obviously, being a fan of the Batman, it was quite cool. There's a beautiful sort of crane shot as they pan up and there is an assassin stood there dressed in black. The Johnny Cash of Assassin's Creed. It looked absolutely cracking.
Amazing. It does. It looks fantastic. So that will be this year.
Yep.
Also due this year is another sequel and another Ubisoft game. But it was Far Cry 4 has been announced. It's going to be completely different from all the other all the other games in the series. This is the first one that won't have like a tropical setting. One obviously was set on a tropical island. Two was set in the middle of Africa. Three was set again, another on a tropical island. This one will be set in the Himalayas. So, I mean, a real departure from the traditional Far Cry fare. The only bit of gameplay information that has been thrust upon us so far is that you will have the ability to ride elephants.
Cool. They do animals right in those games. They had sharks in the last game, and I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, Far Cry 3 was fantastic if you didn't play it.
Another thing about Far Cry 3, their online ad campaign, I don't know if you saw it, but anyway, if there was an advert like on YouTube or any kind of site like that, wherever you moved your cursor, like the guy's eyes would follow it around. It was really it would follow you around. It would be really creepy. I clicked on the ad. I was like, that's wicked.
Far Cry 3 was fantastic. It just kind of fell off at the end. It really didn't have, like, the ending was a bit shit. But Far Cry 4, I'm glad they're trying something different, and as long as they keep up. I mean, to be honest, the Assassin's Creed and the Far Cry games are quite similar. I don't know whether you noticed this, but in the Assassin's Creed games, you have to synchronize by climbing the towers. Exactly the same as in Far Cry 3 when you had to climb up the radio towers. But that's not a bad thing. They're borrowing from each other. They're from the same series. They're from the same, you know, games company. And if you're doing something right, why not do it right on another one of your products? So I'm really looking forward to both these games. Just the last bit of Ubisoft news, which will go into movie news, is that the Splinter Cell movie has been that was announced a while ago has a director it's Doug Liman, and he was the director of the Bourne Identity, so he's obviously got experience in these espionage movies. Sam Fisher is a really interesting character, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he is portrayed on the big screen.
So, we couldn't have got Johnny on here, especially this time of year, as it is WrestleMania season, without having a bit of a discussion about WrestleMania. Talk about this year's WrestleMania, whether you're excited, whether there's anything you're looking forward to, or what you think of the main event and the developments with that that's happened. And we'll have a bit of a chit-chat about the Hall of Fame and the people that are going in this year. So, we'll start with Johnny. Anything you're excited about in this year's WrestleMania?
Definitely Bray Wyatt's WrestleMania debut, because he couldn't be wrestling, like, in my opinion, he couldn't be wrestling anyone better when it comes to Mania. Because Cena's, as much as there's mixed opinions about him, he does deliver a good WrestleMania style match, like year in, year out.
Yeah.
And Bray, to me, is like the opposite of Cena as far as character goes. Like, he's, if John Cena's Superman, then Bray Wyatt is the kind of the Joker kind of character, like completely mental and really dark. So
yes, definitely.
I think it's going to be a good match, and the whole situation with the triple threat main event now, I think, is going to be really cool because it's been a long time since we've had like a big storyline play out throughout a WrestleMania. Like the last like good probably over 10 years of Mania now has been, and you watch WrestleMania, and those are the matches that happen, and they're great, but it's all what's there, and it's all scheduled. There's no kind of what's going to happen element. Like the most, I mean, 17, where McMahon runs down. That's kind of the last thing that comes to mind. Okay. Where there's some huge. They did a thing with The Rock, but
I mean, they did the title tournament for WrestleMania. Remind me,
four. The tournament. Yeah.
See, that was great.
That was an ongoing storyline throughout WrestleMania. But I know exactly what you mean. There's no WrestleManias where they've been like at the beginning of the show with some backstage stuff, and then it comes into the.
Well, there was, as I said, the closest thing you've got probably is WrestleMania 10 as well, with the sort of Bret and Lex thing going in there. And it was, Bret had that match at the start with Owen, and that the winner of that would then go on to, sorry, not the winner of that, that was going to be a match. So he had that match, Lex had to go against Yoko, and then no one was quite sure what the main event was going to be. Would it be Lex versus Bret? Would it be Yoko versus Bret? So
yeah, exactly. It's just interesting, and I think that is something that will draw people towards buying the pay-per-view is the element of, well, we don't know what the main event's going to be. Like, whereas every year, if people see the match listing, and it's pretty much confirmed that there isn't going to be any changes. So I think it's cool.
Do you think there's any surprise? Do you think there's any danger, either of you, with this? Is there any way they can end WrestleMania without Daniel Bryan winning those titles?
I think there is, but I don't think that's what we're going to see.
The ultimate troll move at this point would be for Triple H to end Mania as champion.
Yeah, but I mean, it would be a troll move. But I think it would be money as well. Like I think it would be cool.
It would. Like everyone that says, "Oh, we're going to turn off because of stuff like that," are the very people that tune in on Raw the next day to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And the people that are so opinionated. I mean, it's great that they're opinionated, but they are the people who like have accounts on fan forums and things like that. Like these guys are real fans. Like they're not just casual, you know, young people or families or people that were into it or watch it as a nostalgia type thing. So I don't know. I think because of how hot it is, I think it feels like they should capitalize on Daniel Bryan's win, because I think if they try it for too long, it might kind of not work. Like how they tried to get Triple H and The Rock. They could have had that at Mania 2000.
Yeah.
But they thought, no, let's build it a bit more. And then they did it at Backlash, and like I think it was the wrong move. So I think they will capitalize on it. But, I mean, I'd love to see Triple H with the belt.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, the only problem, especially in professional wrestling, is that it's always more interesting to see someone chasing the belt than to have it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that Tommy Dreamer Raven thing where, like, for 2 years, Tommy Dreamer couldn't beat Raven. You know, like, that really...
Well, when he did beat him, it was like, okay.
Yeah, and then that was it. It was finished, yeah.
I'm not a betting man. But I would put money on the idea that Daniel Bryan will win the championship, but he will not be stood up vertically in the ring at the end of WrestleMania. I think it will be a beat down and a Triple H stands tall with Randy Orton or with Batista or whoever they decide. Or
maybe that would kind of compel everyone to watch Raw.
Blair's
back as well. I'm just thinking, you've got well-known
there we go. See,
you know, I hadn't even thought of that.
The Secret of Evolution.
But then that's the thing, is it? You have Daniel Bryan win. You have the Evolution reunion, the beatdown. Triple H picks up the belts. They all walk out, and that's your end shot. Is Triple H with the belts in his hand? He's taken them away because he could do that.
Ric Flair with his teeth in his hand.
Ric Flair with his teeth in his hand and his boobs in his slippers, and that's how we end WrestleMania. But that to me is very interesting. Okay, so next question.
Brilliant.
Next question. So the Milking It podcast is saying end WrestleMania with an Evolution beat down on Daniel Bryan. That gets me interested. I'll watch WrestleMania the next day, whether Sting's coming back or... Sorry, watch Raw the next day, whether Sting's coming back or not, depending on whichever rumours you
I mean, let's just... Before we go into our list, let's go with the most far-fetched way of ending WrestleMania,
Batista wins.
And manages not to split his trousers like he did on Raw this week.
Sting comes out.
Beat Baker for no reason.
Ends the streak.
Well, unfortunately, can't drop down from the ceiling because it's an open air stadium, I think, isn't it? So.
And plus, after the
OA, that would be wicked. Like, just drop him out of a plane. Like,
they did it. They did it with him. They did it out of a helicopter once on WCW Nitro.
Sexy.
So they could do that, but
after the Owen situation, I don't think anyone would be lowered from the ceiling in WWE again.
Well, other than Michaels. That was before.
That was before. So.
Okay, so before we move on very quickly, so it's clear, obviously, Brock is not winning against The Undertaker.
Yeah, I don't think Brock's the guy to take the streak.
I don't think there's a guy.
No, I don't think it should be.
I don't think there's any reason to. There's no problem. You know, they've not managed to make it look like it's going to be a legitimately great match because everyone knows Brock's not going to win. But Brock's fucking hell, take the microphone off him, please. Don't let the guy talk. He should not be doing. He sounds like a girl when he's. I wouldn't say that to his face, but obviously. Just don't let. You've got Paul Heyman there. That's what he's there for. He's one of the greatest talkers ever. Completely. What do we think about, kids, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal?
Can't wait. You know I'm a big old school fan, and I knew you were going to ask, and I was determined not to have a mocking answer because I genuinely love a bit of a battle royal. I think it's a callback to the WrestleManias of old.
Yeah.
When's the last time we had a battle royal in WrestleMania? It was an interpromotional one, wasn't it?
Actually, it was the one. I think it was 24.
Was it the one where Kane won and won the opportunity?
Yeah,
to
it was.
Win the
it was
ECW
like an
royal.
ECW battle royal, and like, yeah. No,
I mean,
cared.
Some of the names they've thrown into the hat for the Andre Memorial Battle Royal. I've got
Dolph Ziggler. There's some big names, yeah.
We've got Ziggler, Big E, Fandango, Alberto Del Rio, Damien Sandow, Titus O'Neil, Christian, Sheamus, Big Show, Mark Henry. Right. You know, no, but it's like a mixture.
The mid-card is in the Battle Royal,
the entire mid-card, yes.
And I mean, there's something to be said for that because, I mean, take it from, like, looking back 5-6 years ago, the mid-card would get a chance to have an actual match on Mania, you know what I mean? Not that Battle Royal isn't, but I think nowadays we're just seeing either, like, massive storylines or just main event guys in matches now, and that's it.
This is great. Every single match they've got on there other than this has a video package to go with it, and, you know, you're on board with it straight away. What I would say is that obviously there's still four people to be announced for it as of when we're recording this. I'm a bit disappointed there aren't a couple of legends been announced yet. Maybe
if Hogan doesn't win it, I'm not going to be happy. Like,
it's clear that Hogan, I don't think, will go anywhere near it. But
no,
my money
wrestling at all, is he?
Hogan's not cleared to like walk.
Yeah.
my money goes on Big Show winning this.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that as well.
I mean, he used to be billed as Andre the Giant's son. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's no harm in that. It's not gonna enhance his character any or anything. But it feels
like a good first winner. Like, they did want to do it again. The fact that Big Show won the first one, because I mean, Big Show retired in 2008. So how much longer can he do it? Do you know what I mean? So I feel like if he won the first one, I think it would be fitting.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's just a shame that I mean. It's, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, but any time I've been to see sort of British wrestling, independent wrestling, as both of you have experience of, there was always a battle royal to make sure everyone got a match. You'd have a load.
And to make sure that the promoter's getting his money's worth.
Precisely. So there's a little bit of that to it, as it feels like a bit of a paddy thing that you would normally have.
I agree.
You know, this would normally be on the free show before WrestleMania. However. The caliber of people that are in there is slightly better in the sense of having people like Goldust.
I think it is on the pre-show.
No, surely that's got to be Usos versus Curtis Axel and Ryback.
Yeah, no, I think so.
Oh, is it Curtis Axel and Ryback?
Yeah. Yes,
that's
really?
That's the tag team title.
Yeah. Obviously, we said no spoilers. However, I'm going to have to mention it because it's been announced as a match and I want to get your feelings on this. The Shield.
Versus versus Kane, and the New Age Outlaws. Dave, I was going to mention this as well. Mm. I was under the impression that they were turning the Shield like out and out faces. So have they turned the New Age Outlaws heel?
Yeah, they turned them heel a long time ago when they attacked CM Punk.
Yeah, they were.
I thought they were faces. I thought they were nostalgic faces.
Totally were, but then they turned heel.
Oh right.
Yeah, they came out on Raw this week dressed in suits next to Kane. So as we know, suits are bad.
They've been Triple H's boys since they came back, but they've only just really embraced it at the moment.
Okay,
I think they've even stopped doing the Road Dogs intro and stuff like that. Now it's like a proper
It gets too much of a face pop. I think it gets too much of a positive reaction from the crowd,
and so it should.
No, yeah, definitely. But what I mean is,
you didn't know.
for this thing to work, like they've got. I think they have to cut it out.
No, yeah, it's totally.
I'm excited for that match though. Like, I love Kane, and Corporate Kane is awesome. It reminds me of I know Boost. You said you didn't watch Breaking Bad. I don't know if you do, Dave.
Nope.
Okay, well, there's a character in it who's kind of like the heavy for one of the villains, and he's kind of like this kind of emotionless thing, but he's really scary, and that's what Kane reminds me of. His name's Mike. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
What do you reckon? I've just noticed that Wade Barrett hasn't been announced anywhere, so I feel like he's probably going to do a big bad news thing where they have this huge stage, I reckon. That's what I imagine.
Yeah, I think
they're not using Barrett to the fullest of his abilities.
They will. I think they will capitalize on it because I think this is getting a better reaction than his more recent kind of incarnation, which is kind of like just the kind of brawler. Because before he had like the jacket on the shoulders and it didn't really work, so they tried something else. But I think this is really working.
He's a bare knuckle boxer from the mean streets of
Brooklyn. And how far has The Miz fallen since the Cena Rock storyline? Like, main event of Mania, Cena Rock storyline ends, and now he's in the pre-shows.
Unfortunately, that can be the life cycle, though, can't it, for people that are put up against, you know, look at King Kong Bundy from WrestleMania 2 to WrestleMania 3, you know, went from being steel cage main event to Hillbilly Jim and a bunch of midgets. So that can happen.
The Haiti Kid and Little Beaver, that was going to be on my list, actually, sir.
That was on your top fives. Okay, fair enough. Sorry.
Speaking of the list, we have discussed it at length, I feel, this year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it looks like a good card. It looks like it's going to be an interesting WrestleMania. I can't say it looks like it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time, but there'll be some storylines concluded, some started. I see the Shield breakup maybe happening at WrestleMania, or at least being teased even more. Like you say, the John Cena match is just a John Cena match. It's nothing special. It's the equivalent of the Undertaker versus Triple H from WrestleMania 17 and that kind of feel to it. But yeah, the story is the main event. It's the opening.
Also, looking at the women's match, I foresee a really good time there to go to the toilet, make yourself a drink.
I was going to make that joke, but I know you're a big fan of women's wrestling, so I didn't want to go there.
I'm a big fan of women's wrestling. That, from what I see, is not women's wrestling.
I was going to say, I can see one women's wrestler and a load of divas, so that's...
Yeah.
You mean Cameron, right?
Yeah. Yes, Brie Bella.
Yes. One other note about Mania, just quickly, is that Cesaro and Swagger haven't been put anywhere yet, and I feel like they will probably... Oh, are they in there?
No, they haven't been put anywhere.
I thought they might have been in the Battle Royal.
I think they're going to announce a match between the two of them at some point, because that is what it's leading up to.
I feel like just on paper, and like from what's been going on, I feel like that those two against each other would have a WrestleMania feel to it.
Don't even define the heel and face. Have Zeb Coulter in the middle of it trying to deal with both of them.
That to me sounds like a Mania match.
That sounds to me like a very, very strong opening match.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, we've had some shoddy opening matches, like JBL Finley in some weird hardcore match. That was the weirdest opening to Mania I've ever seen.
Belfast Brawl.
Oh, mate, what was that? It was just so strange.
Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan a few years before lasted
it was wonderful.
7 seconds.
It was 18, and it was good. I thought that was good. I thought that was a good opener. And it was great to see two people who, like, I've met and spoken to, like, at Mania, even though it was 18 seconds. I thought it was wonderful. It was really cool.
Fair enough.
I'm just a mark. Like, you guys are like, they should have had a 25-minute, like, near-full match. I'm just like, I'm just glad to see them out there.
They could have been in the bank that year, get everyone off to an exciting start, you know?
I thought that was an exciting start. Like, boom, big entrances, title change, storyline expansion with AJ.
Sheamus won the Royal Rumble for that opportunity, though.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
That's my only...
It does bury the Rumble.
A little bit.
The Rumble.
But anyway...
Do you think... Sorry, very quickly. Talking about burying the Rumble, do you think having a 30-man Battle Royal diminishes the importance of having a 30-man Rumble?
No.
Was it you that was saying to me that that's their admission, like, look, we did a terrible Rumble this year, we apologise, have a free one as part of your WrestleMania package?
I don't think that was me, but... No, I don't think it does diminish it, because a Battle Royal and a Royal Rumble are very different matches. Battle Royal is probably, you're looking at 12 to 15 minutes, I see, a Battle Royal lasting top whack. Whereas a Rumble has a whole, like, kind of drama to it, because, you know, the whole mystery of who's coming out and when they're coming out, or if you're Bobby Heenan just telling the pay-per-view audience who the next entry is every single time.
Okay, very quickly, talking about this, the last thing we'll talk about this year is the Hall of Fame. There's been some interesting announcements this year. We've discussed it briefly previously, that the Ultimate Warrior obviously is the main name that was the first one that they announced. But this week they've added to the other names by announcing that Scott Hall, Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon.
Yes.
So there, he's been inducted under his Razor Ramon gimmick by the rest of the clique, apparently. So that'll be an interesting one. Quite a dangerous idea to have Jake Roberts and Scott Hall both in New Orleans for a weekend. But it'd be very interesting to see. So what your thoughts on the Hall of Fame this year? Anyone you think didn't deserve it, does deserve it?
No, I think everyone's in there fairly. Although I will question the popularity of Carlos Colon outside of kind of very niche groups of wrestling fans.
Yeah.
To me though, that's not a nod to wrestling fans. That's more of a nod to his importance of, like, kind of cementing the business, like, as WWF was kind of forming, more so than in WWF.
It's the same as having Antonio Inoki in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that kind of clouds that induction for me is that I know the WWE are in discussions about buying the World Wrestling Council's back catalogue library. As part of the network, and it seems like this may be part of that negotiation.
The Hall of Fame has always been political, I feel.
Yeah, of course it has. But yeah, Mr. T, are we happy that Mr. T's going in?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
There's always one, isn't there? There's always the one celebrity entrance. We've had, is it Bob Rose?
Pete Rose.
Thank you. We've had Pete Rose, we've had people like that in there, so you've always got to have there is a celebrity.
Was Arnie in it? That was something else.
No.
Arnie was awarded a WWE World Heavyweight Title Belt replica. And that
just for being a bodybuilder, essentially.
For being Arnie, and then he got to punch Triple H, which is, you know, the dream of many a fan.
I know Stallone inducted Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Did Arnie have something to do with the Hall of Fame at some point? I'm not sure now. I don't know whether I'm getting confused with my 80s stars, but I know Arnie is on Raw this week, if anyone's had a chance to catch up with it. A very surreal moment of Arnie and Hulk Hogan stood next to each other, cutting one of the worst promos you've ever seen in your life. But
I cannot wait to see that.
If they don't do the handshake from Predator, you son of a bitch.
Oh, like, my God, that would pop me out of my seat.
but I agree, the Hall of Fame for me again this year, of course I'll watch it, you know, it's one thing that I always watch every year. It's a show that of course it's for marks, of course it's for, you know, the industry and the fanboys out there, but I always enjoy the Hall of Fame. It's something I do go back and watch quite a few times. There's been some absolutely amazing speeches that people have done when they've been inducted. Off the top of my head, the Iron Sheik and Dusty Rhodes are probably two of the best. Bobby Heenan was just amazing when he did his acceptance speech for it. It's also one of the weird things that if you've got someone who's not a wrestling fan, they don't tend to mind sitting through a bit of the Hall of Fame, because it has that kind of look of an award ceremony, so they're almost intrigued as to know who these characters are. And thankfully, this year, you've got people who are great talkers in people like Jake the Snake Roberts. You've got someone who is obviously going to do some batshit crazy thing like the Ultimate Warrior.
He's not. He's going to disappoint everyone.
Do you reckon so? Unless he makes that statement that queering doesn't make the world go round, I'm not prepared to watch any further, sir. But
surely he's right though. Surely it's some kind of gravity or the axis of the world makes the world go round. But queering, yeah, no.
I think he's scientifically accurate, but morally repugnant. So.
Yes. Oh, I don't agree with him on moral grounds, but scientifically he's right.
Okay, so final question about the Hall of Fame. Ultimate Warrior. Does he come out in makeup or not?
Probably not.
And for anyone out there who wants to ruin their childhood, the last match Ultimate Warrior had was against Orlando Jordan. Yes. I don't even know where.
It was in Barcelona, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Italy. Check it out. It's utter terror.
It was for a promotion which a friend of the show and former guest, the Amazon Aisha Ray, tours with every now and then, and that is the NWE based out in Italy.
It was
Orlando Jordan versus The Warrior. And he teased the big splash at the end, and then when it came down to it, he was too tired to actually do it, so he just gave him a little clothesline. And we joined Jay Hodgkin this week for a Harry Potter-themed backstory bollocks. So get your wands out. It's Backstorious Bollockus.
Bipedal creatures get too much love on backstory bollocks. I'm always talking about Mega Man this and Man at Arms that. Hell, it even affects the rest of the Milking It podcast as well. I've sat down and listened to Davis and Lamont prattle on for eons at the beginning of every show about who's going to be playing Batman or Ra's al Ghul in the movies. But never that bush that obscures the Batcave or the third rocket-sporting penguin from the left. Sure, I've talked about the blocks in Tetris and the hills of Mario, but we all know that they're clearly played by men in unconvincing rubber suits. The cockroach in Wall-E was CG, duh. Well, things are going to change around these parts. I've instructed the mont that needs to do a segment on Jake Roberts' snake or Coco Beware's parrot or manator or something. And as for you, Davis, you had better not leave that chair until you've confirmed the name of the mistreated horse actor in Sasha Grey's upcoming 2015 remake of Animal Farm. And no, for once, I'm not talking about the Orwellian version. As for me, I'm giving fauna its time in the sun, because without sun, it will die. That's photosynthesis, guys. First year of secondary school science. You might have heard of it. Ladies and genital beards, I give you the backstory bollocks of the Whomping Willow from Harry Potter. The Whomping Willow was the huge tree that beat the Wesley's Ford Anglia like you would beat your junk looking at upskirt pictures of Emma Watson, you disgusting monstrous pervert. The Whomping Willow was planted in the Hogwarts grounds by half-Alsatian academic professor Remus Lupin when he was a thigh-slapping schoolboy in the year of our Lord 1971. It was used to obscure a secret entrance to the Shrieking Shack, which sounds an awful lot like the sort of place that public schoolboys go to initiate their weaker younger peers to the world of first-time buggery. It's not sex, it's a power thing. A sexy power thing. On Harry Potter's first day of his second year at Hogwarts, it did indeed beat the mechanical snot out of a flying Ford Angular, because it belonged to a family of ginger people. Now, you may think that that is a bit harsh, particularly if you look a bit like a Duracell battery when you dress in black yourself. But you must remember, though, while we're used to good-looking ginger people these days, what with your Hayley Williams and your Damian Lewis's and your Christina Hendricks, the Whomping Willow was brought up in the 70s and early 80s, when all ginger people looked either like Sissy Spacek, Space Hoppers, or Gonch from Grange Hill. These people were terrifyingly ugly. Remember, it's okay to hit ugly people, they expect it. The Whomping Willow was notorious for trying to beat things to death, which is an unusually dangerous thing to keep near children. Strangely, though, it's indicative of Hogwarts as a rule. Seriously, everything in that place is a fucking death trap. There are woods filled with spiders, a room that contains a giant killer snake. There's traps everywhere. The place should be condemned. Why aren't the teachers doing anything about it? Nothing. Because once a year, one of them turns out to be an attempted child murderer too. So they let a teenage pupil sort it out for them every year. The responsibility on that poor boy. He lived in a cupboard for years. But back to the Whomping Willow. Just what does a tree do to unwind every night? Well, as I said, it's a child of the 70s. In between maiming school kids, the Whomping Willow listens to vinyls of 70s rock bands like Mud, Slade, Status Quo and Sweet. Despite being a 3-ton murder tree, old Whompsy is very gentle with his vinyl collection, daintily popping them on the old 45 and placing the needle with the dexterous skill of the Karate Kid in that scene where he catches a fly in Chopsticks. All his records are neatly catalogued in alphabetical order, and yes, he does have a couple of long players by Gary Glitter, but he claims he's a fan of the music, not the man. Whomping Willow hates MP3s and CDs so much that he once branch-punched a centaur to death for buying him the Best of T-Rex on digital optical disc, loudly shouting in whatever language trees speak that vinyl is so much more warm and earthy, and all the other pretentious twaddle that wankers say. He's also a fan of Near the Knuckle Borderline Racist sitcoms of the era like Love Thy Neighbour and In Sickness and in Health. Indeed, in January 2017, young James Sirius Potter was awakened by a loud noise emanating from the grounds of Hogwarts that sounded like a snooker table being ripped in two by a Tyrannosaur with Schwarzenegger's arms. When he asked his teacher Neville Longbottom about the thunderous din the next day, the professor coolly stated that Hagrid had purchased Whomping Willow a box set of Mrs. Brown's Boys for Christmas. The willow must have found a particularly ribald cock joke hilarious and laughed so loudly part of his bark tore open. Yes, magic trees can laugh so loudly their sides actually split. And yes, it can be caused by archaic lowest common denominator double entendre comedy uttered by a man in unconvincing drag. I'm afraid trees don't watch Peep Show. Trees are rubbish. That's why they breathe carbon dioxide. The dicks. Regrettably, in 2022, the Willow's hardline right-wing 70s attitudes proved to be its downfall when it kept excusing the actions of celebrity paedophiles from its era, saying, "Things were different back then," and deliberately targeting ethnic minority children to womp, ignoring the Caucasian children completely at this point. After a series of complaints, he was sedated with magic and chopped down and turned into matches. Some people say his spirit still exists in these matches, as not one black person has successfully managed to light a cigarette, yet using his remains. And that's the story of the Whomping Willow. Tell the story to everyone you meet. They must know the truth.
So, that was part one of episode 20, a mega, mega Milking It podcast to celebrate 20 episodes of your favourite Stroll for the Week of Geek. I've been David Davis.
And as always, I've been Boulamont, and this week we were joined by...
I have been Johnny Bailey. Thank you guys for having me so much. I had a wicked time.
That's cool, man. Glad to have you, and it's been nice having you in the Milking It booth. And we sincerely hope everyone out there enjoyed it. And don't forget to join us next week for more of the same, with a peek at the world of geek.
You wanna milk it and you know. You gotta milk it and you know.
You guys corpse a lot when you do it.
That's all on the show. That's all us that laughing.
Well, hello, welcome to the...
No, if it gets stuff wrong, that tends to be a... Oh, fuck. Let me just redo it. But to be fair, it's not...
Unless it's mine, in which case Dave keeps it in to make me look like the goon of the pair.
You are the goon. I'm going to make you look terrible. I'm going to bury you throughout this entire thing.